Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the podcast. Before we get to my guest, I am going to be doing stand-up. I'm back on tour March 25th and 26th at Off Cabot Comedy Club in Beverly, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. So if you're in the Boston area, Beverly, Mass, Off Cabot Comedy Club, go to my website, paulmercurio.com for tickets, and see you there. Enjoy Sean Thornton.
You have to compartmentalize everything too. I mean, sometimes you have to fight your friends, your former teammates. Sometimes you don't want to do it, but you have to put your mind in the place to do it. For me, the reasons you do it are, one, to stick up for your teammate first and foremost. Two would be to stick up for yourself if there's a situation where you need to stick up for yourself. And three would be to change momentum, which doesn't happen as much anymore, but it used to happen all the time where if we were down by 2-0, go out there, challenge the other team's tough guy. Thought process being, you put your face on the line for a minute, punching each other. Your teammates rally around that and know you didn't do that for the greater health for you individually. You're doing it for the team and then they rally behind it. So those are the three reasons basically that you would fight.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. That is a two-time NHL Stanley Cup champion, Sean Thornton of my Boston Bruins. Big fan. Very excited to have him on. I've never spoken to an NHL player before. There are so many questions I've had about what it's like to play in the NHL, what it's like to get into the NHL. He's an enforcer. He's talking there about his process he goes through in deciding whether or not he's going to beat the crap out of an opponent or not. It's really interesting. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. He gives you a really cool insider view of what that world is like. There's nothing else like it. Before we get to that, it's terrible what's going on with Russia invading the Ukraine, and really inspired by one moment where the Ukrainian soldiers are on an island and they're being told over loudspeaker to, you know, give up. And basically the guy says, go fuck yourself. I thought that was the best moment that I've seen of anything in the last 30 years, and good for them. And heart goes out to them and hope they stay free and independent. But that was a great moment. And by the way, I just only hope that Hollywood doesn't make some cheese ball movie after this all happens. And they have this moment of, you know, heroism, and they have, you know, they take that moment of, you know, telling the Russians to go fuck themselves as like sort of the pivotal moment in the movie. And then they have, like, with our luck, Dwayne Johnson, you know, The Rock playing the Ukrainian soldier who says that. And then he like arches his eyebrow and flexes his muscles. Cause I would start World War III if that happened. Nothing against Dwayne Johnson. Seems like a very nice person, but God, he's in everything and he's everywhere. I went to get gas and he was in the Mobile Mart. Yeah. Like behind the register, I bought a couple of lottery tickets and some Tic Tacs. And I think it's the law. He is pretty much everywhere now. So anyway, enjoy Sean Thornton. Please send the podcast link around. Tell folks about it. Tell your friends about it. If they haven't subscribed, please tell them. And if you haven't or your friends haven't, follow me on social media at Paul Mercurio. I'm on all the platforms because it's the law. And Would love you guys to see what I'm doing on social media and YouTube as well, at Paul Mercurio. All right, guys, enjoy Sean Thornton. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Very excited to have someone who doesn't know it, but means a lot in my life. He spent 14 years in the NHL with the Chicago Blackhawks, Anaheim Ducks, my Boston Bruins, and Florida Panthers. Has won two Stanley Cups and has a great new memoir out. Sean Thornton, Fighting My Way to the Top. Great to have you on, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for the 2010-2011 Stanley Cup. I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, so I'm a big Bruins fan. And then I told my high school buddies that I was interviewing you, and they sent me an insanely long text of questions that I should ask you. So,
that should make this a lot easier, then we don't have to think anything.
Yeah, exactly. I think I got it covered, but it pretty hilarious. Like I said, you're interviewing Sean Thornton. Ask him. Like it was like talking to 11-year-old kids. So
You had an amazing career. You're currently a front office exec for the Panthers, the Florida Panthers. But I want to start at the beginning a little bit, which I don't usually do. But I find it interesting that, you know, you were in the AHL, AHL for 8 years. You got drafted and in the seventh round of the 97 NHL draft. But you actually thought that that was a prank when you got drafted. Is that right?
Yeah, it was. That's a true story. I was golfing with my buddies back home in Oshawa, and literally just went back to my place because I was the only one that had a case of beer in the basement. So I went to go grab a case of beer and have a few in the backyard, and the phone rang. We were joking earlier in the day, like, kind of got drafted today. One of my buddies played in the OHL as well, so we were both joking about it. And then the phone rang, and it was Bill Waters, and Bill Waters, you've been drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs in the seventh round. And I said, F off, and hung up the phone. And then my agent called back and said, no, that was really Bill Waters. You just told the F off. He really got drafted in the seventh round. We'll send you the jersey and everything. You have it, but we'll follow up. I was like, oh, whoops. That's how I started my pro career. Yeah, I was telling the GM to beat it.
That's great. I was actually working as a lawyer and I started writing jokes as a hobby, and I went to a private function and Jay Leno was there. And I said, well, I don't know, I'm never going to use these jokes. So I gave him the jokes and I said, if you need them, you can use them. And then like 3 days later, my phone rang and it was Jay Leno. But I didn't think it was Jay Leno. I thought it was a friend punking me. So he's like, hey, it's Jay Leno. How you doing? And I'm like, yeah, right. He goes, no, really, it's Jay Leno. And I actually said to Jay Leno, yeah, do me a favor. I'm busy. I go, and by the way, you do a lousy Jay Leno. and he's like, I think I do a pretty good me. I'm like, oh, Christ, it's Jay Leno. I'm like, I know exactly the feeling. I'm curious, what part of the game for you came easy to you and what was difficult to master? There's so many facets to being a great hockey player. Was there any particular area where, like, man, this is like a knife through butter since you were a little kid, and then other parts that were, you know, harder to master?
Yeah, the defensive side probably came a little easier than the offensive side, sure. Maybe because I played D my whole life and then, you know, most of my pro career as a forward. But fighting part, I would say came easy, but I was definitely better at that than I was at scoring goals, obviously, as my career stats would tell you. offensively, I asked players that were gifted offensively about it, and they would say, like, the game slows down in the offensive zone for them. They can see plays happening before they happen. And again, maybe because I just grew up on the blue line most of the time, that did not happen to me. It was just complete chaos when I was in the offensive zone. But the defensive side of the puck, I was pretty comfortable with.
So for the novice watching the game, what is the key to being really good on defense? Is it the awareness that just the flip side of what you just said about offense, that you see your instincts, your ability to sort of prognosticate, okay, this guy's going to go this way? Is it based on sort of research and watching tape on guys, what moves they're going to make? Like, how do you?
I think it's instincts a lot, which I'm not sure if it's instincts or it's just repetition over time, right? That your body and your mind gets conditioned to playing a certain way. Not putting the puck in a bad position either. You have optionality every time you get the puck in the defensive zone. You want to make a play, but you know, quickly your mind has to process what's the least dangerous path here and try to take advantage of that. Seeing plays develop in front of you and trying to be able to read and react. I've played with some guys that are obviously way, way, way better than me at this. Kid Sasha Barkov here in Florida, some of the best defensive and offensive instincts I've ever seen. He just thinks the game another level. For me, I worked hard. I tried to think about, you know, stick to the system, play our system, not put anybody in a bad position, not put myself in a bad position. And if I broke even, I was happy.
it's like going to the casino. if you
exactly my whole career, every time I stepped in the ice, was rolling the dice.
It's like you come home, honey. I didn't mortgage the house, so everything's cool. So you know, you
so
were
a paycheck in 2 weeks.
Exactly, exactly. So you were known, you know, you're also known to be a bit of an enforcer. Did you sort of seek that path out when you were, you know, younger, coming up in the game, or how did that sort of come about for you?
Well, I was drafted in the OHL with Peter Repeats, and the reason they took a chance on me was the GM at the time, Jeff Tuohy, had seen me in a fight that I was involved in this Quebec midget tournament. Somebody ran my goalie. I was the captain, so I thought it was my responsibility to go out and defend my teammates. And it was a pretty good fight where I got the better of them. So they drafted me, and I kind of knew that was, you know, without it being said to me exactly, I kind of knew that was the role that I was going to be trying out for. So I'd always been decent at fighting. I grew up in a fairly blue collar, tough town. My family's motto was like, don't ever start a fight. Always stick up for somebody that's being picked on, and make sure you finish it.
right.
So I grew up doing it a little bit at a different time, right? But grew up doing it a little bit. So I had a mentor who was my coach when I was about 10 years old. He lived around the corner from me that trained other hockey players, and he really helped me get into the mindset of what you need to do to be an enforcer. And I went into training camp in Peterborough and did what I had to do and kept on moving up from there.
What is that mindset? Right. Cause I would imagine you got to you got to pick your spots. It's not like just, hey, I'm in a bad mood today, I'm going to punch somebody in the face. Like it's, there's probably a process to it a little bit, right? Like in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to compartmentalize everything too. I mean, sometimes you have to fight your friends, your former teammates. Sometimes you don't want to do it, but you have to put your mind in the place to do it. For me, the reasons you do it are, one, to stick up for your teammate first and foremost. Two would be to stick up for yourself if there's a situation where you need to stick up for yourself. And three would be to change momentum, which doesn't happen as much anymore, but it used to happen all the time where if we were down by 2-0, go out there, challenge the other team's tough guy. Thought process being, you put your face on the line for a minute, punching each other. Your teammates rally around that and know you didn't do that for the greater health for you individually. You're doing it for the team, and then they rally behind it. So those are the three reasons, basically, that you would fight.
Do you kind of, in the game, whether it's, let's say you're down 2-0 or, you know, the guy on the other team just, you know, runs your goal, whatever, you know, somebody needs to get whacked a little bit. Is it just sort of known that, okay, you got to do that? Is there a conversation with your teammates on the bench? Is there sort of a nod of the head from the coach? Let's say during a period or in between periods, generally, like, how does that part of it work?
You know what? I had 400 and something of them, including the minors, as a player. And I would say all of them were a little bit different. Now, yeah. The coach telling you to go do it, that was, I would say, very rarely the case. I don't know if it ever happened, to be completely honest. When you get to that level, you're expected to know your role, whatever that role may be. And mine was obviously, part of it was being an enforcer. So I took pride in the fact that, you know, 98% of the time I knew when to do it and why to do it. And, but yeah, everyone's a little bit different. Sometimes the conversation, sometimes you just grab a guy. Sometimes you're not sure if you're down, if you're up 2-0 and something happens. Are you willing to, are you putting the win at risk if you give them momentum for going to sort out a situation? I mean, it's honestly, every situation is different. You just try and manage it in your head at the time and do what you think's best. And sometimes I've made the right decision. Sometimes I made the wrong decision, but you make more right than wrong. You'll end up sticking around pretty long.
Right. One last question on this enforcer role. What's the key to winning a fight on the ice? Because to me, while, you know, I understand sort of the emotional rationalization for it, right? It helps, it gets your team sort of pumped, you're down, it rallies the team, that kind of thing, or gets the crowd into it that then helps the team. But like as a practical matter, it seems like a really friggin' hard thing to do. You're on these thin blades and you're both wailing on each other. Is it grabbing that jersey over the like, I remember I got in a bar fight once and I just instinctively grabbed, if I'm facing you, I grabbed your left shoulder. I went to my right because with my left hand and I pulled him toward me and I got leverage on him and started punching down on the side of his head, which worked for a little bit. But like how it may sound like I'm just curious, like how do you try to win those?
Yeah, it's different with the person you're fighting, depending on size, reach, strength.
Yeah.
What hand they throw, whether they can throw both. But the basic principles are try to be on the inside, meaning my hands, what I'm grabbing are inside their hands. So I didn't have to swing around guys. And that's pretty much the basics for every martial art and boxing. You want to be on the inside and controlling, the movements. Again, it changes if I'm fighting somebody 6'6", I can't just grab towards the shoulder because I might not have enough length in my arms to reach him and vice versa. He probably does. So at that point, maybe it's you're grabbing the back of his neck to try and control where his head is at and
yeah,
away the reach advantage. I mean, honestly, everyone's a little different. And yeah, we worked on it a lot after practice when I was younger on different situations with different sized guys.
Oh, really? You would work on that in practice?
Yeah, we did when I was in the minors. We worked on it a lot, and in juniors a little bit too. But my biggest thing was trying not to get hit. No one likes getting punched in the face. I want to win as many fights as I can, but taking as little damage as possible.
Right, right. Was there one fight in particular? I know you've had a couple, and you talk about them. Tell folks if you don't mind. Was there one fight in particular? Was like just brutal, or just it went too far, or you know, anything that stand out?
I mean, when I was a junior, I fought a kid named Lee Cole. He hit me with a punch. I didn't see it coming. I mean, we were fighting. It wasn't a cheap shot. I didn't see where he got a good one in. That put my nose on the other side of my face, gave me a pretty good concussion. So that one stands out as a bad loss. And then John Scott, obviously, we got into it. At the Garden against Buffalo, same thing. I mean, he's 6'7", 6'8". Just a lot of mass for me to give up, and I did not do so well on that one either.
What triggered that?
I think they signed him for our team. We played Buffalo the year before. There was a pretty big rivalry. We would have been probably would have had the upper hand on that rivalry. Mm-hmm. So Buffalo signed him for a reason. Again, my job to go out there and defend it. I just didn't do that great of a job that time, unfortunately. But I put in there.
That's it. You put your body on the line. You know, you talk about life in the minors, and you were there for 8 years, and you developed leadership skills there. Talk about that a little bit and what those were and how that came about. Was it because over time you were sort of the older guy in the locker room and naturally kind of developed those skills? Or is that something kind of you always had from when you were a kid in the game?
I did have a little bit of it growing up, and I was usually a captain on most of the teams I played on growing up. And then, you know, junior hockey, you learn a lot going into pros. And I had some good leaders that I played for that I learned from as well. I'm a very straight shooter. So I've always been able to hold people accountable and in the right type of way. And I think that's a big part of leadership. I'm not sure everybody has that ability to you know, get in somebody's face and tell them that they need to be better in some way, shape, or form. And also, you know, when you're the guy going out there and defending them, they know you have their back too, right? So that's right. A big part of leadership, I think. If you're holding people accountable, but they don't feel you have their back, then it's more of a dictatorship than a leadership. But I think they know at the end of the day that I always had their back and would go out there and do anything for them on or off the ice. I think that's where, you know, it gets a little bit easier to stand up and call somebody out or bring them in a back room and tell them they need to be better or take them for a beer and say, we need more out of you. I think, you know, then again, you have to lead by example too, though. You have to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, did I do everything I could to be the best professional today? And right. If you can't do that, it's not easy to hold people accountable.
Right. So you're being in the front office, how is that looking back sort of, are there things about the front office now that you appreciate now that you didn't as a player and didn't understand what that role was and vice versa? Like, you know, what is that maybe a front office guy may not be able to appreciate unless that he should to do his job effectively that he couldn't unless he played the game?
I think the biggest thing for me, and I was fairly involved in the front office when I was in Boston and here in Florida before I turned on to the other side. And that's why I wanted to do this job. That's why I, you know, trying to get a knowledge for what went on in the offices before I retired. The thing that I think is most shocking to players if they knew are the amount of hours that go into business on this side. I mean, it's nonstop. It's, you know, 24/7, really. Your phone's always on. You're always taking calls. You always have to be available for clients, the boss, the coworkers, your direct reports. It's a lot of hours that are put into making this happen on the business side. And I think that would be the biggest takeaway.
Mm-hmm. So just to finish up, why did you decide to write the book? I mean, it's a great book and it's very honest. You know, kind of, was there anything in writing the book that you came to realize about yourself or your career that maybe you wouldn't have come to realize if you hadn't started to write the book? And what was the motivation that you wanted to get, that you would want to see people take from the book?
Yeah. And I said this a few times. I said no to the book a couple of times because I don't really like talking about myself or putting myself out there. You know, it's a fairly private individual, away from the rank, but I was convinced that I had a unique story that may motivate someone that's been looked over or isn't the star player or isn't on the easy path or has been grinding it out, is not sure what to do. That I wanted to be able to tell a story that, you know, if you work hard enough and you're resilient enough, things can work out for you. They might not always, but it's definitely worth giving it a shot and not giving up. And then what I found out about myself, while I was writing this book, and the process wasn't what we expected. I planned on Dale Arnold, my co-author, you know, coming with me through my hometown, coming with me to Boston, coming with me down to Florida, like really just being immersed in my day-to-day with my friends and getting a feel and picking stories out of what we were talking about. And the pandemic hit a month and a half after we agreed to do this. So there's a lot of phone interviews, but the one thing I'd say is, you know, I've always given back, and that's what I wanted to be known for. I don't think until I wrote this book, I really triggered like why I was so into that, other than I just enjoyed it. But I could probably pinpoint it to, you know, my first year in St. John's, when I went to go visit a hospital and some sick kids and saw one of my best friends at the time, sister in there getting treatment, and I had no idea she was even sick. And that's probably, you know, what spurred my passion for making a foundation, going to hospital visits, donating money and all that. I don't think I really realized that in the back of my head until I talked through it with Dale on hours and hours and hours. And then kind of, it was like, wow, that might've been the moment that spurred my passion for this.
That's great. Well, that's great. Well, we're glad you did. It's a great book. And, it's out now. Sean Thornton, Fighting My Way to the Top. And one of my buddies, told me that you're good friends with Tuukka Rask. So tell him to re-sign with the Bruins, will you?
I can't tell him anything about signing because that would be tampering, but I am good friends with him.
Come on. Who cares if you tamper? You're Sean Thornton. No one's going to fight you. Do what you want to do. You can. All right. Listen, I know you got to jump.
I think you're skating with him. So I think if he's going anywhere, that's probably where he'd be going.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, great to have you on. Congrats. It's a great career and congrats on the book. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
There you go. That's Sean Thornton. Terrific guy. kind of a gentle giant, really, really kind of, understated guy, for a guy who could literally beat the crap out of pretty much anybody he wanted to. Anyway, and a great hockey player, by the way. And hope you enjoyed it. Please follow me on social media. If you're not, tell your friends too as well, at Paul Mercurio, and on YouTube as well. And please, send the links around for the podcast. Tell your friends to subscribe. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks for checking it out.